Everybody knows exercise is good for us, but why? And why doesn't my food tracker balance my calories even when I weigh my food and use a power meter and a heart rate monitor to track energy usage? Do I really have to step on a scale every day to know if I'm eating too much? And how can I tell if I'm eating too little to build muscle and to avoid bone and immune function issues down the road? Today on episode 132, I am joined by Dr. Harry Mix, a Stanford University PhD and the founder and CEO of Calorify, an emerging technology company providing athletes and sports teams with the world's most accurate measurement of energy expenditure powered by doubly labeled water. Only by accurately measuring metabolic activity can athletes and the rest of us know if we are consuming too much or too little food to power our athletic pursuits and the bodily functions that repair our bodies and keep us healthy for a long time. Harry Mix explains that professional athletes are shifting from how little can I eat and still perform to how much can I eat to perform better, and he walks us through what is known about these complicated and vexing questions about balancing calories in and out and why exercise is not a great tool for losing weight. All right, let's talk to Harry Mix. Harry Mix, welcome to the Wise Athletes Podcast.
Thanks for having me.
Looking forward to what you have to say today.
Yeah, this is going to be great.
All right, good.
Harry, this is going to be a good one. It's going to be a little different than we normally do, because we are going to touch on your product that you sell more than we normally do. But I think that's okay. I think people will understand that what you guys have is a really leading edge technology. We've all heard about doubly labeled water, but we've never thought that we would ever be able to take advantage of that for something that we wanted to do. So I look forward to learning more about that and talking about that a little bit. But mostly what we're going to try to understand today, you know, based on your knowledge of metabolism, is why is it so dang hard to understand, other than getting on a scale over the, you know, day after day forever, whether you're balancing your calories in and calories out? And so I look forward to hearing what you have to say.
Well, that's great. It's a fundamental question, and it's just a really interesting space that we're in. It's something that we're all conversational in. Everybody knows about calories, and I think on some level has to admit that they believe in them. If you don't eat that much, what happens? If you eat too much, what happens? You know, right. But we're not measuring it at all, let alone accurately. And so that's where this all comes into play, right? So energy is life. Everything that happens in your body involves energy. When I say energy, we can use calories interchangeably, unit of energy. So you mentioned calories in, calories out. So two sides of an equation. If you know both sides of the equation, you know the answer, and it's perfect, and it works every time. So every time that this is actually rigorously studied in a scientific way, either in an inpatient setting or in a tightly controlled outpatient setting using this method we're going to talk about, doubly labeled water, the calorie math works. So no serious scientist debates whether or not calories work. There's a whole lot more to health than calories, but calories perfectly explain weight, for example. So let's take those one by one.
Okay.
Calories in. How many calories are you eating? Well, you can count, right? That's pretty much all you have in the marketplace right now.
Oh my
and
God.
And it's really, really hard. Yeah, it's really hard to do.
That's way harder than you said. I've tried.
Yeah, it's so bad. It's so bad. And here's how bad it is. Most people are about 30 to 40% off. Wow. And you're probably not going to be surprised to learn that they undercount, right?
Right.
So we all just tend to forget that handful of almonds or whatever, you know. We all tend to think that serving size of peanut butter is like a mounded, like all the way, right? This is not news to anybody. We all do it. And then there's one other, you know, thing that contributes to this. You know, I'm not a conspiracy theorist, but I don't think it's a conspiracy to say that food labels are not perfectly accurate.
Yeah.
And you know, if I were to think about a food company and their incentives, which direction do you think might they be biased to put on their label, right? So it's not crazy to say that. So those three things, not counting everything you put in your mouth, underestimating how much you put in your mouth, you know, what a serving is. And finally, you know, taking a manufacturer's word for it when that food probably hasn't been tested or held to any real standard, combined to make people off by about 30 to 40% on average. So we have a lot of customers that are really rigorous with how many calories they're counting. They're using food scales, and they're being militant about this. And when we compare them to our measurement, they're still off by, you know, sometimes 20% or more. And they're just super frustrated. It sucks. It's really hard. But counting calories is next to impossible. Nobody is good at it. And you're kind of at the mercy of all these forces that are kind of stacked against you. So we're actually, using a technology called doubly labeled water. We're going to go into that, I'm sure. But it's the only method of counting calories that doesn't require you to count. And so it just makes you have to take a test. It's an at-home urine test, and you have to repeatedly weigh yourself. So that was the other piece of your point there, was that, yeah, the only way to know at home if you're in calorie balance or a calorie surplus or a calorie deficit is to repeatedly weigh yourself lots of times in a regular, consistent way. Because that's the other thing. Your weight just does fluctuate throughout the day, and especially athletes. So the athletes fluctuate even more. Why? Well, you're working out a ton, so you're hydrating a ton. Maybe your salt intake is higher than a regular person. You have glycogen going in and out of your muscles. So we, for example, test a lot of, you know, Tour de France type riders and people like this. And sometimes they have 20, 30 pounds of material flowing through their body each day. And so their weight is all over the place. And so we like to do daily morning weigh-ins after you've gone to the bathroom, but before you've had breakfast. And we'd like to see at least a week of those every single day. 2 or 3 weeks is best. And that is the only way that you can actually tell on your own, without doing any chemistry, if you're gaining or losing weight, is to do it every single day, you know, rigorously in the same way over an extended period of time.
Oh my God.
So there's that. And then you finally get to the other part of the equation, which is even worse, which is calories out.
Oh yeah.
Calories out is a nightmare.
Oh, but wait, my computer on my bike tells me how many calories I burned, doesn't it?
Exactly. We can go into all of these, right? So, you know, I don't want to disparage wearables. They're really cool. And power meters on bikes, they're really, really cool. I love all that stuff. I have all that stuff. I have Training Peaks. I like, you know, I do all that too.
Awesome.
It's just that, like, you can't actually believe the calorie number on your Apple Watch, your Garmin, your Fitbit, your Whoop, your Oura Ring, or your bike power meter. They're not actual. Well, the power meter one I do actually want to talk about. But the other ones, what they're doing is they're taking your age, height, weight, and sex, and they're running a kind of a regression line. So they're trying to do the best fit through real data, like doubly labeled water data. And what you find is that they're about 50 to 55% accurate. So they can be off by thousands of calories per day.
Are they using like a heart rate to figure out?
Yeah.
Okay.
So it starts with your age, height, weight, and sex, and that gets you to 55% accurate. And then our scientific advisor, Herman Ponser, who's a Harvard PhD and a Duke professor, has done some work showing that if you add all of the accelerometry and all the heart rate stuff that a wearable does, you only get about 5% more accuracy out of that. So it only jumps you up from 50 to 55%, meaning that you can be off by thousands of calories per day. So at a given body weight, we see variations in folks, and this is published in the literature, like cover of Science magazine, 2021. You can see some people at the same weight burning 1,500 calories and other people burning over 6,000 calories. I'm sure the 6,000 calorie person was working out a ton. I'm not going to debate that. But I'm just saying there is a huge amount of variation that's not predicted by those equations and that your device doesn't know about. It can't help you out that much.
Right.
There are two ways of measuring how many calories people are burning in total in a real world setting. In specific, like within exercise, we can talk about that too. We can talk about a VO2 max test and we can talk about your bike power meter and stuff. But in total, your 24/7 calorie burn, there's two ways. One, you can lock someone inpatient into a metabolic chamber. This is in a hospital setting. This is not a product. It will never be a product. It's highly invasive. It's insanely expensive. It's food jail. You go into food jail and you live in there for a week and you don't get to live your normal life. You don't get to do your normal training. But that room that you live in measures the amount of oxygen and carbon dioxide going in and out of that room. It measures how much you breathe. It measures how much CO2 you produce. So same exact chemistry as a VO2 max test, you know, breathing into the mask, except you don't have to wear the mask. You live inside the mask. Mm. There's only one other way to do it. And it's the, turns out it's the only way to do this in a real world setting. And that's doubly labeled water, which is the product that we, the technology we brought to market at Calorify, the company I founded. And so what doubly labeled water is the exact same chemistry, exact same math as the chamber or as a VO2 max type test. But instead of actually getting your exhaled CO2, we're going to pick up the same chemical signature in your urine. So you don't have to wear a mask and you don't have to live in jail. So you get to live your normal life. You get to do your normal training, and we're going to measure how much total CO2 you produce over the course of a week. So the process is you take a sip of this, you know, again, it's called doubly labeled water. It's essentially, you can think about it like a fingerprinted water. There's nothing in the water. It's just H2O, but there are different rare forms of hydrogen and oxygen. So we can tag those water molecules with these rare hydrogens and oxygens in order to just passively trace them through your system. I can do a deep dive on the science of how that works, but what we're doing is the same exact thing. We're measuring how much CO2 you breathe out. So that's it. That's all that's ever been invented by science. Just so every time you're in the checkout aisle at, you know, the supermarket and it says something, 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 boost your metabolism, melt fat, whatever it is, just know that whatever they said in any of these, news articles, popular science type pieces, unless they said metabolic chamber or doubly labeled water, they're not talking about actually measuring the complete calories in, calories out budget. And so if you do, and there, you know, there aren't that many studies, but if you go in and see those studies using these methods, the calorie math works perfectly. It's just that it's impossible for us to try to do this at home without the help of technology. We try, we all struggle with it. I'm in the same boat. I'm on MyFitnessPal trying to figure out what's going on, and I can't.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, so some people are listening now and going, oh, a calorie is not a calorie, and they're really upset. And I just want to say that conversation is irrelevant to what we're talking about. We're just talking about units of measure.
Yeah.
And so we're not talking about what makes you more hungry or not and things like that.
Yeah, let's talk about like two like nuanced aspects of like a calorie is not a calorie. I mean, so first of all, a calorie is a unit of measurement. I mean, it's like saying a meter is not a meter. It's of course it is. Now, does every spoonful of food that you eat have the same effect on your body? No, there are different macronutrients and they have different, you know, they have different effects on your body. So some macronutrients have more like satiety, inducing effects than others, like they make you feel more full. So that's one thing. There's also thermic effect of food. And we, by the way, at the company, we measure this. Thermic effect of food is kind of you can think about it like an efficiency term. Like of all the calories that you eat, not all of them get absorbed into your body. Some of those calories get burned through, in the digestion process. So different macronutrients, protein, fat, carbs, have different thermic effects. So fat's very efficient. You eat 100 calories of fat, you're going to absorb 97 to 100 of those calories. Carbs, 90 to 95%. Protein, only 70 to 80%. So you eat 100 calories of protein and you eat 100 calories of fat, they're going to have a different amount of energy going into your body net at the end of that digestion. And so a calorie, when people say a calorie is not a calorie, I think they're talking about some of these other effects and some of these twists to it. It doesn't mean that a calorie is not a calorie. It just means that, you know, protein has a higher thermic effect of food than fat or something like that. None of this breaks the laws of thermodynamics, right? Thermodynamics still works.
And that's sort of the key point. And so we can move on, but just to keep the people who are thinking something else from feeling like they're not understood is a lot of people feel like there is an insulin model that where you eat carbohydrates and you get a spike of insulin, then the game is afoot and things are happening that cause you to put on fat. And so anyway, I don't actually believe in any of that, but that's irrelevant to what we're talking about, which is just we've got energy that comes into our body that's available to burn. Mm-hmm. And then there's the energy that we use for a variety of things. The surprising thing is eventually we're going to get down to some of what Dr. Ponser's work has revealed in a shock to me anyway. For years, I used to put into my, food tracker everything I ate, and I would put in all of my calories that I burn, based on all of these estimates that, I was very careful to capture. And I would have, but of course, the variable was always, what's your base metabolism? Well, how the heck should I know what it is? All I would know was that if I put in, say, 2,200 calories, well, it didn't work. It didn't balance. It said my weight was changing when it wasn't changing. So I just I kept having to lower it and lower. So I would end up having like 1,600 calories as my base metabolism. And I didn't, it's like, that didn't make any sense, right? I mean, isn't it 2,000 and all of that? And so why didn't that work?
I actually have a strong hypothesis on that without having dug into your numbers. But those age, height, weight, sex equations predict your basal metabolic rate. Basal metabolic rate is how many calories your body needs to just stay alive at complete rest. So maintain your core body temperature, breathe, pump blood, like that's it. Everything above that is considered activity level, So we actually measure something called physical activity level, which is the ratio of how many total calories you burn divided by your basal metabolic rate. It turns out that the equations are decent at predicting basal metabolic rate. They can usually do it to within, I would say, 20%. If you put somebody into a lab, compare them to the equation, they're usually pretty close. It's actually respectable. The thing that they have an extremely hard time doing is actually measuring your activity level. And so usually what they'll do is they'll ask you your age, height, weight, and sex, and then they'll ask you two questions. They'll say, have you ever done one of these where they say, how active are you outside of work? And then they'll say, how active are you at work? It's like, how the hell would you know? Qualitatively, two survey questions is going to somehow predict accurately how many calories you burn in a day? Give me a break. Like, there's no way that you're going to get close to the right answer, even if you're starting with going into a lab and getting your basal metabolic rate measured, and they call it a resting metabolic rate test. You go into a lab, you lie on a table, and you breathe into a mask, and you get the right answer. Even when you go in and do a professional thing with a professional nutritionist or a professional sports scientist or whoever, you start from that outstanding square one, and then you multiply it by a complete guess. They're going to multiply that number. If you're a serious, weekend warrior, maybe they're going to multiply it by 1.9. They're guessing. They don't know. Maybe it's 1.7. Maybe it's 2.3. We have measured, I know that your audience is primarily athletes, so we've measured multiple teams of professional athletes, all about the same body size, so all have the same lean body mass, all doing the same training. Mm-hmm. And the variability in their activity level is enormous. So we tested professional women's runners. They were all running about 70 to 80 miles a week, and they all had the exact same weight and body composition. They're, professional marathoners, right? And they were burning over 1,000 calories a day different. So it wasn't their basal metabolic rate that was different. It was their activity level. And by the way, it wasn't the activity level of their mileage itself. It was everything else in their life and everything else in their day. And that's where this conversation is going to get super interesting and could go in a million directions. We've found connections to mental health, things like anxiety disorders, ADHD, things like autoimmune diseases, just everyday stress. Somebody was a new dad, somebody moved that week, somebody started a new job. Everything in your life that makes you involves energy somehow. It does involve calories. And so it's not just what you do in those, let's say you're a professional athlete and you're training 28 hours that week. Yeah, but you still have, 140 other hours that week of not training that you're still, picking up your kids from school or grocery shopping or whatever else it is that makes you burns calories. And that's where you get all this variability. And that's why you can't answer this with two survey questions about your exercise and about, you know, do you sit or stand at work? It's just too complicated. You're trying to find this answer of like, what is the sum total of everything? And everybody else is trying to guesstimate all the pieces and add them together. And all this doubly labeled water method allows us to do is to just measure the total and back everything out inside that. And it just gets a lot cleaner.
I gotcha. All right. So it, on one hand, you could say, okay, so what?
Yeah.
I got a scale. You know, I got pants. When they get tight, I got to cut back, right?
Yeah.
You know, or I buy bigger pants, and that's a slippery slope. But I'm wondering if the so what isn't that isn't getting back to this constrained metabolism idea that I first heard about anyway from Dr. Ponser and his work with the Hadza, where the body, this other stuff that the body is doing, you'd said in sort of your normal life, well, it's more than just like, oh, you know, I fidget, or, you know, I'm walking a lot because I got it to and from the car to my kids' practice, and I'm going to the store a lot. You know, it's more than that kind of a thing. It's like my bones are remodeling, my organs are shrinking or growing, my immune system is strong or weak. These are also uses of energy. And in a constrained model, and you can help us understand what that means, maybe if I'm not eating enough, my body is not doing enough of stuff that I can't tell until I have osteopenia or whatever you call that, you know, bone problems. And so having a very accurate understanding of, am I eating enough for the amount of exercise that I'm doing? That's important today, not just like sometime down the road. Am I making any sense?
Yeah, you are. I've got a million directions we could go with this. Okay. That's why it's be such a fun conversation. Yeah, I totally agree. You know, I actually have a background as an elite distance runner. I was one of the fastest, like 3K, 5K, 10K guys in the US.
Wow.
I think back in my running career, I certainly saw this a ton on the women's side, but I think it existed on the men's side as well of the sport. You know, there was a mentality of like, how little can I eat, to get away with, you know, what I need to get away with. Right.
Oh, yeah.
And now when we're working with these pro teams, these early adopters, top Tour de France team, a couple NBA teams, a lot of pro runners, Olympic bronze medalist, gold medalist, the conversation is flipping. The conversation is, how much can I eat? How much can I fuel? And one of the things that comes out of Herman's work, actually, Dr. Ponser, who's our scientific advisor at Duke, is he is exploring what are those limits to how much you can eat, because there has to be a limit, right?
Sure.
There is a finite number of calories that your gut can absorb. It just is. Even if you force feed, there's still only so much that you can absorb. And so what is that limit? And we have this really, really cool, you know, direction forward as to what we think the limit might be. And we also see some of these elite athletes maybe breaking that rule. And so I have this, you know, fundamental question here, and I'm hoping that our business can help answer it, which is, you know, are some of these true elites, like the best cyclists in the world, elite because they can eat more and therefore burn more?
Wow.
It's really, really interesting. Most people, most of us, can't eat the amount that we're talking about. We're talking about 2.5 times your basal metabolic rate, which if, you know, you use the example somewhere around 2,000, so that'd mean 5,000. Well, I bet you could eat 5,000, you know, today, but could you eat it tomorrow? Could you eat it 365 days a year without gaining weight?
Right.
That's a lot of exercise.
And I got to, you know, and if I'm training, you know, maybe I'm training, you know, 6 hours a day and I'm sleeping 8 or 9 hours a day. Well, I'm not eating it in those times. So there's a very constrained window where I got to eat a lot of calories.
In fact, that's one of the areas where I think they're innovating the most. Some of these, particularly cyclists, are getting extraordinarily good at fueling during their training. These guys are eating like almost 600 calories an hour, and they're on the bike 6 hours. So that's like 3,600 calories right there. And then they're eating 5,000 off the bike. It's insane what's possible. And so I think this might actually be the future of endurance sport, is more fueling, more training, more burning, right? constraint model, if you want me to go there next, it's a really, really cool concept. I also think it's one that is misunderstood because it gets picked up by like clickbait internet titles and people kind of misrepresent it into kind of a caricature of what it is. I just saw this on Twitter yesterday, somebody taking it and saying, Herman Ponser says, no matter what exercise you do, you always burn around 3,000 calories a day. And that's not what the constrained model is. So the model he was reacting to is this additive model, which is the one that I think that we all mostly have in our heads. So that model is I burn this many calories normally, right? And then I go on this run. And so then I eat this plus this amount of calories and I don't gain weight. And that's not true. And I think we all know that because we've all tried. We all go for a run. Our Garmin says 500 calories. You eat two donuts and you're like, how come I'm not losing weight? It's like, yeah. So the constrained model, all that it says is that these pieces of the puzzle, these pieces of your metabolism are not operating in isolation from one another. They're all a connected, integrated system. And so therefore, when you increase one thing in maybe somewhere else in your budget, the other pie slice kind of shrinks. And so this is actually one of Herman's kind of core arguments is that like exercise is unbelievably good for you. It's the best thing you can possibly do because like say that you do regularly exercise, maybe your immune system burns fewer calories due to that exercise, which actually means that you have less risk for autoimmune diseases or something like that.
Or less inflammation or something like
exactly.
that.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. And so what he's saying is exercise is the best thing you can possibly do. It tells your body to correctly spend its energy, to correctly allocate its energy spending, right? So it's really, really good for you. But exercise is not as good at making you lose weight as we all kind of maybe think. And so let's say go back to that example of the run, the 500 calorie run. So it doesn't perfectly add on top of your non-exercise calories because some of those non-exercise calories are going to shrink a little bit. But it does still add more than the baseline. It's not totally flat. So let's say you normally burn 3,000 on a day that you don't work out and then you work out for 500 calories. You don't burn 35, but maybe you burn 32 or 3,300 calories, something like that. People will sometimes put Herman into this box and say, oh my gosh, he believes that no matter how much you exercise, you always burn the same. And we just know that's not true. And he's published on this many, many times. He's published on tons of extreme athletes burning extraordinary amounts of calories. We have tons of evidence that, yes, you absolutely can increase your metabolism through physical activity. There's no debate on that. It's just that through normal, moderate amounts, it tends to kind of not add as much as people think. And that's where the Hadza example is just so cool. So yeah, you remember this story, right? So he went to East Africa and measured a hunter-gatherer tribe called the Hadza. These guys are walking about 10 kilometers a day. You know, they take breaks, they get honey, they get tubers, they hunt. But yeah, they're lightly active throughout most of the day. And when Herman measured them and compared them to sedentary Americans, they burned basically the same amount of calories when you correct for their body size. They actually burned fewer calories than sedentary Americans because they're actually smaller dudes. They're pretty lean, pretty small guys, as opposed to pretty big sedentary Americans.
Right.
So once you correct for lean body mass, though, there's no difference. There's also one other like asterisk I'm going to put on all this, which is cool, which is just that I know we're talking a lot about how many calories people burn. And I just want to make sure that nobody's making like a moral judgment about this. Like having a fast metabolism, I feel like people just universally think that's a good thing. Like that means I'm virtuous or something like that. And not burning that many calories is bad. There's no link between how many calories you burn and, say, obesity, for example. There's no connection. Obese people have been measured, and they burn the same number of calories once you correct for lean body mass as the next guy. Hmm. So I think exercise is good, but I don't think that like there's anything to be worried about, no matter what your number is. If your number is 2,200 and somebody else's number is 3,600, good for you. It's just your personal gas mileage. It's the rate at which you burn fuel. It's a fundamental aspect of who you are, but it doesn't mean like that you're a good or a bad human.
Gotcha. Okay. So let me go back and revisit a little bit of what you said and zero in on something that I think is the most meaningful, anyway, to me, the most meaningful to me. And that was this idea that if I am exercising, and of course, everybody has heard their whole lives that exercise is good for you. I think it's probably not well understood why it's good for you. I've always just sort of relied on saying, well, it's what your body kind of evolved to do. And so it's sort of like saying that drinking, when you're dehydrated, drinking water is an elixir of life. It's like, well, yeah, you know, if you're designed to move and you're not moving, then moving is good for you. So do that. But the nuance here is that if you're not moving, you're sedentary, then your body has all these extra energy and it is going to use it in some way that it thinks is that it should do in this moment of sedentarianism, right? It's like, oh, I've got this time to do all of this repair and you know, boost up my immune system and do all of these. I don't even know all of what it does, but it's going to do something with this extra energy that it has. And it turns out that might have been good for a day or two. But when you're doing it that way, 365 days a year for your life, it's bad for you. It's accelerating your aging. Maybe somehow this is connected to the whole idea of your mTORs turned on too much of the time, and that's accelerating your aging, and your body's never going into autophagy because it's got all this plenty. It's got plenty of energy. It's never getting the AMPK signal to, you know, we're short of energy, so let's start scavenging. Am I on the right track with that?
I would agree with that. I don't have anything to back that up. I'm not an expert in that area, but that sounds right to me.
Okay.
I think exercise is this fundamental thing that we are designed to do. And I think there are probably a lot of processes that it kicks off. I just can't rattle them. I can't rattle them off.
Yeah. Okay. Well, anyway, so where I was just trying to go was this, that in our internal processes, you know, they're running on a program, and that program is assuming that we've got some amount of energy for doing bodily maintenance and building. And if I have too little energy and for too long, then that's not good either. Things are starting to shrink. I'm cannibalizing my proteins so that I can use proteins somewhere else that I have got to have. And, you know, like people who maybe are starving themselves because they have some disorder that causes them to do that, or maybe they're they don't have enough food and, you know, the body is just trying to survive. But in the same way, if you've got extra energy because you're sedentary,
yeah,
then your body is doing all of this stuff that it would, that is good for you if you're doing it a day every so often. But if you're doing it all the time, you're getting this accelerated aging thing. And so this is why either you've got to, you know, you've got to figure out how to balance the calories in and the calories out in a way that you don't have these extra calories or too little calories. You know, the whole red S thing that I've been hearing about.
Love to talk about that.
And, you know, women kind of have an advantage in that they get kind of an early warning signal where they'll lose their period. And that's like, oh, you know, you're doing something wrong here. But a man, the same problems will happen to the man. He just doesn't have that early warning sign. It's just 10 years later, he's fracturing his bones. And he's like, what I've had plenty of, you know, impact on my bones. Why are my bones weak?
Yeah, I'm really glad you brought up red S. Really complicated issue, and one that we're actually working to address at the company. So a lot of our customers are, you know, very interested in not getting red S. I know a number of people who've suffered from it. It's such a bad condition. So relative energy deficiency in sport can take you out for like 6 or 12 months. I mean, it destroys you. It's, you know, formerly female athlete triad, you know, so disordered eating, amenorrhea, which is losing your period, and osteopenia or osteoporosis were kind of the three, but they realized that males have a lot of these things too. And so now red S leads to mental health issues, sex hormone issues, bone density, immune function, like I said, menstrual cycle, very, very, very bad crisis. And essentially what it is chronic underfueling. And so there's a metric that we have that there's no other, you know, remember we were talking in the very, very beginning of this conversation about how many calories you're eating. We're the only way of measuring that without taking anybody's word for it, without making them count. And so there's this quantity that's really important. It's called energy availability. And it's kind of the diagnostic for red S. So energy availability is defined as how many calories you eat minus how many calories you burn through exercise. And then it's expressed per kilo of lean body mass. So, how many non-exercise calories do I have left over after my training per kilo lean body mass to do everything else that I need to do to be healthy as a human? So am I fueling enough for my training and for everything I should be doing outside of training? And so red S territory is getting below like 30 calories per kilo of lean body mass. That is like clinically low energy availability. 30 to 45 is like kind of subclinical, like, you know, a lot of, you know, elite distance athletes do a flirt with that territory. Over 45 is considered optimal. So we're working with athletes to hone in on these numbers. We're also working with red S researchers who are, you know, writing grants to actually do studies on like collegiate runners, for example, other groups that are at risk. So it's an area that I'm really passionate about as a former distance runner. It plagues the endurance community, particularly distance running, I think, with the bone injuries. They're just so rampant, you know, tibial stress fractures, metatarsals, navicular, femoral neck, sacral stress fractures, all these things. I used to, back in the day, you know, back when I was running, I just chalked everything up to mechanics and saying, I was running too much and that's why this broke. And I think the more that we learn, the more that we realize that there's a metabolic component to a lot more things going on. So I think there's major metabolic components to, you know, cancer and autoimmune diseases and all these other things that simply, you know, have just been kind of put in their own little box before. And I think overtraining and runners, everybody just thought, oh, it's because they're running too much. And it's like, well, yeah, but how? Like, explain it. And I think this is, you know, putting us in the right direction. Measuring it has to be a part of the solution. There has never been a big problem that we've ever solved without measuring it. And so I think we're on the tip of the iceberg here, where we're finally starting to measure elite endurance athletes and learn what's going on with their body and with their energy.
Right. Well, even for the older athlete, you know, they want to do well. And if they can be a little bit lighter, they're going to do a little bit better, at least in the short run.
Yeah,
so
exactly.
People have to understand that they're optimizing for today and this year, and the cost might be that they're going to have bone problems for the rest of their lives. So, you know, be smart, be careful. Yeah. And then, you know, but how can they be careful if they don't actually know, I guess, is maybe the point that your company would make is, you know, you're guessing, you know, the best you could guess at is 20%, and that's not accurate enough. You could have these problems and not even know it. And that's why your product can get you an answer that can keep you from hurting yourself for the long run.
Yeah, it's definitely a component of our mission is to help people really understand what's going on with their bodies and stay out of trouble and improve their bodies in the way that they want to.
Okay, great. I want to let you dive a little bit more into the details of the technology in just a second here. What I first wanted to do, though, was something that had come out of Dr. Ponser's work that if people haven't heard of it, they got to hear it here. And that was this question of, you know, everybody has always known for a fact, absolute certain, even though it's not in the Bible, they were still 100% certain that metabolism dropped as you got older, right? You know, once you weren't 30 and then once you weren't 40 and it just fell and fell and fell. And that's not right, is it?
Yeah, you know, it's funny. I don't know if this was just like a kind of a nice kind of way of us just like, you know, feeling sorry for ourselves, or I don't know what it is, but There was never any evidence of this, right? So Herman went out and measured it. Thousands of individuals. So to date, about 15,000 people have been measured with doubly labeled water, which at the company we argue is not very many, and we want to 100x that, 1,000x that, and see what we can do for the world. It's incredible work that the scientific community has accomplished, but 15,000 people equates to one person globally per day since they started testing. So it's not a big field. It's a boutique field, but they compiled everything that's ever been done and they looked at it and they binned people by ages and they graphed them out. So unsurprisingly, it starts at zero, baby, and then they're going to shoot up fast. Adolescents are, a little faster, a little bit above the mean, right? And then it's pretty darn flat from the beginning of adulthood to about age 60. After age 60, there is a decline. However, it's not a cliff, but it is a progressive decline after age 60. And it's a decline independent of lean body mass, so independent of your basal metabolic rate, and independent of your activity level as well. It just seems like something else is turning down. The thermostat is being turned down after about age 60, progressively. Like I said, it's not a cliff, but it does drop off. I forget how many percent per decade, but it does. But yeah, the explanation of between 20 and 60, if somebody says, as soon as I had kids, my metabolism slowed down, or when I turned 30 or whatever it was, or another one that we hear a lot is menopause. And I get it. Like, things are changing in your body. And maybe that makes it really, really hard. And maybe your body composition was like the same your entire adulthood, and then it completely changed as soon as you hit menopause. And like, I really feel for you. But if you were to just measure calories in, calories out, that might not be the explanation. Maybe there's something else going on, right? So maybe it's how much you're sleeping after you had kids. Maybe it's the stressful job that you took and your diet changed, or you weren't able to exercise as much, or like whatever else it is.
Yeah.
But it doesn't appear to be your regular, total energy expenditure. People want to blame the expenditure side of the equation, and it's not. It's got to be a combination of those two. There's something else that's driving that.
Well, so I guess if you're, 60 or under, then stop using that excuse.
I feel I'm in the same group, and I struggle with my body composition, and I'm 38 and I have, more responsibilities now than I did, a while back. It's not necessarily the amount of calories I burn per day that's the problem.
Right.
If people want to find a really simple answer for something that's probably really complicated.
Yeah. Well, these charts are, I've copied them. I think I got them from your website. But anyway, I'll put those in the show notes, but they're really interesting. And it shows that the sub-adults, they have a higher expenditure, which makes sense because they're growing, right? They're not just...
They're growing and, how many, 18-year-olds, they're probably super active too, right? I mean, it's like how many, it's not that surprising.
Yeah, yeah. And then it's this nice... incredibly flat line for a long time until they get to about 60. And then it looks like out to about 90, it falls about 25%. So it's not like it falls by 3/4 or something. It falls 25% over a long period of time from 60.
Yeah. It might be 1,000 calories a day or something like that. For your entire, elderly life.
Yeah. Yeah. Anyway, it's very interesting.
By the way, we plot people's results on that very graph. That's how much we like that graph. Mm. It's just a fun one to see the entire global population that's ever been measured and to put your dot. This is you, because you wouldn't know without measuring it where you are. Where do I have a faster or slower than average metabolism? What is my activity level compared to my peers? Things like that are pretty fun.
Awesome. And so let's talk about what you guys are able to do here with the little time we have left. I mean, I'm looking at this chart here, Calorify, and I'm looking at the pro example. So that one is, I guess, the enhanced one. And it's got like calorie burn and calorie balance and energy budget. And I mean, it's just got all, and then there's the chart. How are you gathering all of this information? How is it possible you're getting it from my pee after I drank your water.
It's pretty amazing. We get so much information off of a sip of water and 3 urine samples. So you take the customer experience would be you get a kit in the mail. It comes in 2 days. In the kit, you're going to find this sip of this doubly labeled water. It's just H2O. You won't taste anything. It's water. And it's one sip. In the beginning of day one, you're going to take a urine sample. You're going to drink that water. And then 4 to 6 hours later, you're going to take a second urine sample. And then a week later, you're going to take a third urine sample. And you package them up in a little box that we provide you. It's pre-labeled. It's about the size of a deck of cards. And the urine samples come back to us in 2 days. And we run your samples that day. You get your results that day. And you get a 2-page if you're a regular customer, or 3-page if you're a pro customer, PDF report. Pro customers also get a personal consultation, like a 30-minute consultation with me, and a custom body weight plan if they have a particular goal. Like, we can help map, do all that kind of calorie math for you, map things out custom for your metabolism. I have a sample report. I this is audio only, so I guess customers won't be able to see it, but I have a sample report I can share.
Well, if you can send me a link, I can put that in the show notes and people could click on it and see it.
Yeah, I'll absolutely do that. Let me make a note to do that. We also have, you know, other ancillary materials that explain every one of the metrics in the pro report, how we go about calculating it, what some of the assumptions are, so people can really, really get into the details on the science. That's one of the things we do pride ourselves on, is being really rigorous when it comes to the science.
I also see on here that it's got a body fat percentage. Is that coming from the pee?
It is, and
holy
it's a method
cow.
Called, yeah, it's actually as accurate as a DEXA scan or underwater weighing or the BOD pod, but it's available in an at-home setting. So, you know, this
wow.
is the first time you've, you know, I mean, you know, we've been talking about calories this whole time, but I mean, body fat calipers or those home body fat scales, those things are a complete joke. This is getting you like, and by the way, all body composition measurements have error on them. I mean, I haven't personally done this test, but I would wonder if you were to go to 3 or 4 different DEXA facilities and get it done, what it would say. I would also imagine that your hydration fluctuating throughout the day has an effect there. Hydration affects our test too, but when compared in the literature to DEXA, our results are shown to be as accurate.
Wow.
Yeah. So that's great. So you get, you know, think about it this way. Think about it like the balance sheet and the cash flow statement for your body. So you want to know kind of like what your net worth is. And then you also want to know like what your income is and what your expenses are. And then further, we have that energy budget feature, which is the allocation of your spending. So what is the breakdown of my spending? How much of my spending is going to my training versus my fidgeting? We can calculate all that for you.
Wow. How can you break it down like that? You can tell how much was my thermic effect of food versus exercise
yes.
versus my
yeah.
fidgeting?
So you provide us exercise. We can't tell that without you. So you
okay.
provide us exercise from a wearable or from a bike power meter or something like that.
Okay.
We do calculate your thermic effect of food from your calories eaten that we measure. And also any macros that you give us, or if you don't give us macros, we'll just assume a standard like Western diet. But if you do give us percent fat, carb, and protein, we'll calculate your thermic effect of food directly from that. Basal metabolic rate, we calculate from the lean body mass that we measure, which is very accurate. And then what's left over after you measure all three of those plus the total, so the total minus BMR, thermic effect of food, and exercise equals NEAT. Non-exercise activity thermogenesis. So it's all your non-exercise calories. So a lot of our top pro athletes are really, really interested in their NEAT. And maybe can I minimize my NEAT? You know, can I emphasize recovery so that I can allocate more spending to training? It's a really fascinating area. So we're probably the only way of actually measuring, you know, some of those quantities as well, things like NEAT.
That's interesting. That sounds kind of like it feeds into the whole recovery question, right? People are always saying, how can I recover faster? If I can
right.
recover faster, I could train more. Well, yeah, I mean, one way you could do it is you could eat more. But if you're already sort of near the top of that and you can't, you know, digest more food, then how do you burn less? And that's why they want to cut back on their fidgeting, right? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, I think that's something that's really interesting. We've noticed really high NEATs in people that have anxiety disorders and autoimmune diseases. Hmm. So it's just like fascinating tip of the iceberg stuff. The other thing I've noticed is some people that have super, super high training volumes. We're talking about people that burn 6, 7, 8+ thousand calories a day, like top pro endurance athletes, have high NEATs as well. And I bet it's because, well, you're on the bike 6 hours, how much tissue do you need to repair? So you kind of get that like afterburn kind of effect. You know, I don't have super robust evidence for this or whatever. I'm just saying we've observed this kind of thing. It's really interesting.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, if I'm, you know, I need to repair my muscles, that's my body using energy, energy as well. Exactly. And yeah. Then there's got to be an angle of this. I've been, for different reasons, I've been trying to figure out how to become more parasympathetic, right? Get out of the sympathetic autonomic nervous system so that I can, you know, sleep better at night and those kinds of things. Mm-hmm. But if I was a pro athlete and I was trying to recover, then I would, you know, as soon as my workout was done, I'd be like relaxing music. I'd be doing deep breathing. I'd be doing anything I could to downshift into recovery mode immediately rather than, you know, listening to charged up music. And I'm still going hard, even though my workout is over.
Yeah, absolutely.
Fantastic. All right. So what else should we tell people here? And when we think we've shared enough, then just tell people where they can find you and find Calorify.
Yeah, well, this has been great. I really enjoy talking about this kind of science, and I'm glad we can weave a bunch of different topics together. It's always super fun.
Yeah.
So yeah, I'm the founder and CEO of Calorify, CalorifY.com. We are live. We are serving people. Like I said, I'll be candid. We're primarily selling to businesses because we know where we are in terms of the price point and the kind of technology adoption curve. This is new stuff. And so we know we're not hitting like mainstream, consumer market yet. It's expensive, but it is the best. There's nothing like it. We're serving, you know, a pharmaceutical company. We're serving, you know, multiple NBA teams, a top Tour de France team, the Army, a variety of Olympians, including Olympic, you know, bronze and gold medalists.
Nice.
So we're really, really excited to be working with these passionate early adopters. I hope that we have some in your audience that are, you know, really passionate about metabolism as well and improving their performance or body composition or just learning more about themselves. And so whatever you are interested in or whatever your goals are, we're happy to support you and work with you. You can place an order today. The kit will ship today. I think it's just a really cool product. Also, if you get the pro kit, you get a personal consultation. You get to work alongside us. We stay in touch. So we really do offer white glove service for whatever goal you may have. The regular product right now retails at $795. Pro is $995. Like I said, we know kind of where we are. This is tip of the iceberg. And so we understand that, you know, we're selling, you know, mostly to these very, very, you know, high-end organizations that don't have an issue of a budget. You know, even, you know, me, you know, thinking about this, I love this stuff. That's why I founded the company. Yeah. But I also recognize, you know, the reality of where we are. We're a very young, scrappy company with a bleeding edge technology that we will ramp up and we will make more mainstream, in the coming years.
Well, maybe as the scale improves, the price will improve.
We have a very clear path to do that. It's just, this is brand new. We do have the biggest doubly labeled water lab in the world, but still we're a very small team and it's a very small operation when you compare it to, the big industrial, you know, say a Quest or a LabCorp or something like that, where you get your blood work done for super cheap. So just think about what getting your blood work would have been done, you know, like 50 years ago. That's kind of where it is. So if I had to compare this technology, I would say this is kind of like heart rate variability in the 1990s. We'll get there. But this is, you know, this is the beginning of where people are actually starting to buy it and use it.
Well, fantastic. Well, and there's people listening here and money is not really an object. And so, you know, maybe they would do it. And, but for anybody who is, you know, they're really they've got question marks of, you know, I'm pushing pretty hard. I'm pretty lean. Maybe, you know, have I been too lean for too long? Am I maybe injuring myself in some way? Then I'm not sure about that. Then, hey, it might be worth a few $100 to find out.
Yeah, I can't guarantee any outcomes, but what I can guarantee is that we're a GPS for your body's energy. This is where you're located, right? This is how much you're eating. This is how much you're burning. This is your current body composition. This is how much you're training. This is how much you're fueling. And here's the most efficient direction to head, you know, to reach your goal. So we're a tool. We're an extremely useful tool, but we do not offer the complete solution. We are not the substitute for a doctor or a coach or a dietitian or whoever else is on your team to help you implement a plan. We just pretty much guarantee that if you have a question about calories, it will not be a mystery for too much longer.
I love that. You're a GPS.
Yeah.
That's a good analogy. All right, Hari. Thank you very much, sir. This was very interesting.
Well, thank you so much. Pleasure.
Have a good night. Bye-bye. Thank you so much for joining my conversation with Hari Mix of Calorify. You can find more information about Hari and Calorify in the show notes.